This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Over 160 more Palestinians are killed in new Israeli strikes in Gaza, as various countries across the world warn about the regime's looming attack on the southern city of Rafah. Yemen fires missiles at an American vessel in the Red Sea, vowing to continue such operations until Israel ends its genocide of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And Iraq says it has resumed talks with the United States to set a timeline for the pullout of U.S.-led coalition forces from the country. Hello and welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned to the World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Israel is pushing its genocide in the Gaza Strip more than 4 months into the onslaught. Gaza's health ministry says the regime has killed over 160 more Palestinians and injured around 200 others since Sunday. At least 120 of the fatalities were recorded in the southern city of Rafah in the regime's airstrikes on civilian homes and mosques. Israel also carried out fresh air raids on several locations in Khan Yunis, including Nasser Hospital. Since October the 7th, Israel has killed around 28,300 Palestinians. Most of those killed are women and children. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the U.S. government is responsible for Israel's attack on Rafah in southern Gaza Strip. Hamas says the regime carried out the attack with the approval and support of the U.S. The resistance group says Israel is seeking to force Palestinians out of their homes and land. According to Hamas, Israel is violating the January ruling by the UN's top court. The International Court of Justice has called on the regime to prevent acts of genocide in Gaza. Israel is threatening to launch an operation in Rafah, which is hosting over a million displaced Palestinians from across the Gaza Strip. Aid agencies are warning of a catastrophe if Israel attacks Rafah. Our correspondent in the Gaza Strip, Moti Abu Musabe, earlier gave us the details of the latest Israeli strikes on the southern city of Rafah.
Israeli occupation forces committed several massacres and atrocities against the Palestinian civilians. At least 11 Palestinian houses, in addition to two mosques, were completely destroyed over the relentless Israeli airstrikes that targeted the Shabura neighborhood, which is known as one of the most densely populated camps in the Rafah city. Knowing that the Rafah is completely overwhelmed and overcrowded with the people of the city, in addition to the displaced Palestinians from several parts and areas of Gaza Strip. It was a horrific night for the Palestinian people. Those airstrikes and the continuous Israeli attacks on the city left at least 120 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, according to the director general of Al-Kuwait Hospital, which is located in Rafah city, that a lot of the injuries reached the hospital with amputated limbs, in addition to deep scorches over the extensive use of the internationally prohibited weapons used by the Israeli occupation forces. So we are in front of another appalling massacre committed against the one of the most densely populated areas in the Gaza Strip, where at least 1.3 million Palestinian civilians take shelter there. And these extensive and the continuous attacks are considered as the practical translation of the rising threats of the Israeli occupation forces to attack the city. And they are considered as a preload of having and practicing and carrying out a ground offensive against the city. This means that more Palestinian casualties.
The course of warnings is coming in over Israel's looming ground invasion of Rafah. A number of countries have sounded the alarm, saying the invasion could create a catastrophic humanitarian situation there. Now, the British Foreign Secretary has expressed his deep concern about the possible invasion, while the French government called for measures to avoid a humanitarian disaster. Paris also said it's opposed to any forced displacement of Gaza's population. In a separate statement, the Netherlands said a large-scale military offensive against Rafah can result in many civilian casualties. Ireland also voiced its concern, stressing that the invasion would amount to a grave violation of international humanitarian law. Rafah is hosting some 1.3 million Palestinians taking shelter from the attacks in the rest of Gaza. But Israel has intensified its airstrikes there during recent days. The international charity Action Aid warns of disastrous consequences if Israel increases its air raids on the city. No Palestinians in the city of Rafah brace for an expected Israeli ground assault. We've conducted interviews with people in the city about possible Israeli invasion. Let's take a listen.
Rafah became completely overcrowded with people, particularly after the mass displacement of hundreds of thousands of families from several parts of the Gaza Strip. It is estimated that 1.5 million Palestinians trapped there. We will witness more massacres if the Israeli forces invaded Rafah. They are suffering now even before the invasion. Can you imagine how catastrophic this situation will be?
Attacking Rafah means that the Israeli forces decided to commit more massacres against the Palestinian people, knowing that Rafah is small compared to the 1.5 million Palestinians displaced there. We're still living a tragedy here. I've been displaced alongside with my family for at least four times. We can't find enough food or water, and the food is not so clean, which causes a lot of infectious diseases.
The continuous threats against Rafah mean another catastrophe added to the catastrophes that we have been through for 4 months in a row. The people now argue that times they have to be displaced. In case there was a ground offensive in Rafah, this would mean a disaster even for areas like Deir el-Bala, as it will become overcrowded with displaced people considering the severe shortage of basic needs.
Well, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says that Israel has blocked a major food shipment bound for Gaza. UNRWA says the shipment could provide a month of food supply for more than a million people in the besieged territory. UNRWA says the shipment provided by Turkey is stuck at a port in occupied Palestine due to restrictions by the Israeli regime. The agency says Israel has rejected half of its aid requests for northern Gaza this year. UNRWA chief says the regime has become quite hostile to the agency in a way that it has impacted its ability to properly operate. The Dutch court has given the country's government 7 days to stop exports and transit of parts belonging to F-35 fighter jets, which are owned by the U.S. and headed to Israel. The ruling follows an appeal by a group of human rights organizations. The rights groups argued that the supply of the parts by the Netherlands are a contribution to serious violations of international law by Israel. The verdict follows an order in December by another court in The Hague. That court ruled that supplying parts was primarily a political decision and judges should not interfere with it. Dutch authorities say it is not clear whether they have the power to intervene in the deliveries. Now, the Netherlands stores the U.S.-owned F-35 parts before shipping to several partners, including Israel. Israeli forces kill two more Palestinians in the West Bank as the regime intensifies its daily dose of violence across the occupied territories. One of the killings took place in Al-Quds. According to the regime's troops, the victim was armed with a knife and was trying to stab them after being stopped for questioning. The Israeli military has cited a similar justification for another shooting that happened in the city of Al-Khalil. It says the slain Palestinian man was attempting to stab an Israeli soldier. The killings are the latest episode of Israeli violence, which has increased in the West Bank since October the 7th. In more than 4 months, hundreds of Palestinians have been killed and thousands abducted in the occupied territories. Well, I talked to Pimona Kandu earlier from Ramallah, and she gave us more details on these most recent Israeli killings of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank.
Two more Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces. 15-year-old Mohammed Abu Sneni was shot and killed inside the old town of Al-Quds, specifically in the Al-Wadi street. According to the Israeli military, the 15-year-old Palestinian minor had a knife and tried to stab Israeli soldiers there. He was shot and killed. And of course, the Israeli forces had confiscated his body. The second Palestinian who was shot and killed last night is Rami Rashid Batha from the town of Batir, West Bethlehem. The Israelis shot and killed Rami at the entrance of his hometown. They also claimed that he tried to carry out an anti-Israeli operation. They opened fire at him. He's a 35-year-old Rami Rashid Batha, and the Israelis left him bleeding on the ground. They prevented ambulances to reach him. Then he was shot and killed. Of course, he was shot and wounded until he succumbed to his injuries, and the Israelis confiscated the body as well.
The Yemeni army says it has carried out yet another operation against an American vessel in the Red Sea. The army spokesman says the ship was hit with a number of naval missiles. Yahya Saadi says the Yemeni armed forces will continue targeting American and British vessels in the region, as well as any ship heading to Israel. This, he says, is in response to the recent attacks by the U.S. and Britain on Yemen and in solidarity with Palestinians. Sana'a has reiterated that its military operations will continue until Israel stops its onslaught on Gaza and ends the siege on Palestinian territory. Yemeni forces have targeted over two dozen Israeli-run or Israeli-bound vessels in the Red Sea since Israel began its genocide in Gaza on October the 7th. Well, Iraqis have been critical of the U.S. military's presence in their country. Now, military spokesman says Iraq has started talks on the withdrawal of U.S.-led coalition troops from the country. We've discussed the issue and the growing anti-U.S. sentiment in the region in our News Review program.
Iraq says it has resumed talks with the U.S. on the withdrawal of U.S.-led coalition troops from the country. An Iraqi military spokesman said the talks would be aimed at setting up a timeline for a phased pullout of coalition forces. General Yahya Rasul expressed hope that the talks could lead to an outcome soon. Senior Iraqi officials have said the end of the U.S.-led coalition was a necessity for the security and the stability of Iraq. Anti-U.S. sentiment is running high in Iraq in the face of U.S. support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza and recent deadly U.S. strikes on Iraq. Those attacks killed dozens of civilians and Iraqi security forces. The U.S. maintains some 2,500 troops in Iraq under the pretext of fighting the Daesh terrorist group, which has already been defeated in the country. Tim Anderson is the director of the Center for Counter-Germanic Studies, joining us from Sydney. We also have Glenn Deason, professor of political science at the University of Southeastern Norway, who joins us from Oslo. Welcome to you both. Tim Anderson, so we have had these talks now resume. They had taken place, and in between the time that they initially started a couple weeks back, I believe, until now, there was an incident where there was a targeted assassination of three members of the Kataib Hezbollah. Of which that obviously speeded up things again for the desire for these talks to bear fruit. Do you think they will?
Yes, but the U.S. is trying to keep strings attached there. Now, there is a certain amount of agreement about the withdrawal of this so-called coalition against Daesh, which, of course, was assisting Daesh, as we know. It was really Hashd al-Shaabi and the regional alliance that defeated Daesh in the region. The Iraqis have known this for a long time, but they made the mistake of inviting the U.S. back into Iraq in 2014, and now Finally, the resolve is there in the government, particularly with Prime Minister al-Sudani, to kick them out. But the Iraqis want to kick them out straight away. The US is talking about several years of phased withdrawal and also the implementation of a new security agreement, which is going to be some sort of rock around their neck, because for sure there's already very strong US links to the military technology and other things, that intelligence and so on, with the Iraqi government. And so this is another problem for the Iraqi government, to how to kick them out without those sorts of strings attached.
Well, Glenn Deason, if that's what the U.S. has in mind, it's probably not going to be received, I'm guessing, very well from the Iraqi side. At this point, when you take a look at these targeted assassinations, which are not just something that happens infrequently, let's say, and I'm guessing that it's not something that was informed to the Iraqi government when it took place, that Iraq doesn't want to have its soil, as they have stated, to be used as a battleground to settle scores maybe with other countries, in particular, of course, one would be Iran. How do you think Iraq is going to proceed with these talks? I'm guessing, that they would want a result as soon as possible.
Well, I very much agree. I don't think this will be well received at all. And this is a key problem for the United States. It has a huge legitimacy crisis in Iraq because initially, of course, it said it has to remain, preserve a presence in Iraq to maintain security, stability. But of course, Iraqi parliament already voted back in 2020 to have Americans leave. But of course, they won't leave. So then the legitimacy tends to rest on the idea of fighting terrorism, also the idea of self-defense against its forces, which are now effectively occupation forces, given that they refuse to leave when the government asks them to. So there's a huge weakness here in international law, obviously. There's simply no foundation for the United States to leave, to rule in Iraq or to have their troops there. So the main objective for the United States now would be to put in place security agreements which would allow them to keep some influence and presence and ideally use of force within Iraqi borders. But this, I think, would be very problematic for the Iraqis. Once they agree to something like this, it's going to be very hard to ever get rid of the Americans on their soil. So I think they're going to do whatever they can to have a clean break, but they won't be in the strings attached at all.
Thank you for that, Glenn Deason, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway. And Tim Anderson, thank you, Director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies. With that, we come to an end for this news review.
And with that, brings us to the end of this Worldness edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the firstest of brothers, not the last one.
It is He who has sent His apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that He may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب الله. بسم الله.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
On the occasion of the 40th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, February 11th, 2019, the magnitude of the progress made by the Iranian nation in the last 40 years is well recognized when compared to similar spans following other major revolutions, such as the French Revolution, the October Revolution of the Soviet Union, and the Indian Revolution. It acted as the country's engine in developing the field of science and technology, and in creating the vital economic and constructional infrastructures which continue to grow more prevalent day by day. Several thousands of knowledge enterprises, several thousands of infrastructure and necessary projects for the country in the areas of civil engineering and transportation, industry, power, mining, healthcare, agriculture and water, millions of university graduates or students, thousands of colleges and universities throughout the country, dozens of big projects, such as the nuclear fuel cycle, stem cells, nanotechnology, biotechnology, etc., all ranking among the top of the world, developing 60 times more non-oil exports and nearly 10 times more industrial units.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Quality of the industrial sector advanced tens of times more than before. The industry that only relied on assembling and montage was transformed into domestic technology. In various engineering disciplines, including the defense industry's, visible prominence was observed. Achievements were made in the critical fields of medicine and the position of authority in it. and dozens of other examples of progress are the outcomes of that morale, as well as the social involvement and the collective feeling that the revolution granted the country. Before the revolution, Iran had zero production of science and technology. It had no capability in the industry except for assembling, and no ability in science except for translation of other works. The revolution has elevated to a culmination the popular participation in political matters such as elections, confronting internal seditions, turnout in national arenas, and scenes involving the fight against the arrogant front.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
I'm Fatema Masumi, and this is Simorgh, a special edition dedicated to the 42nd Fajr International Film Festival, a star-studded cultural event that many prominent filmmakers have attended throughout its history.
Iran's annual Fajr International Film Festival, or FIFF, has been held every year in Tehran since 1982. The festival is organized by the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance and takes place on the anniversary of the 1979 Islamic Revolution in February. However, for a short while, about 4 years, the international section was held as a separate event, and therefore the 34th, 35th, 36th, and 37th editions of FIFF were held in April, in order to match the schedule of other international film festivals. Many prominent filmmakers, directors, and cinematographers have attended the Fajr International Film Festival over the past 4 decades. In 2018, American 3-time Oscar-winning movie director Oliver Stone attended the festival, sharing his valuable experiences during a workshop for filmmakers. The next year, in 2019, renowned American screenwriter, director, and film critic Paul Schrader was a special guest attending the 37th edition of FIFF. The list goes on with other distinguished guests, including Costa Gavras, Francesco Rosi, Christoph Zanussi, Robert Chartoff, Bruce Beresford, Agnieszka Holland, Shyam Bengal, Bill Attar, Theo Angelopoulos, Nuri Blige Salen. FIFF was officially recognized by the International Federation of Film Producers Association in 2021, with members unanimously approving the accreditation of the Fajr International Film Festival as a competitive, non-specialized film festival.
As scheduled, the international section of the 42nd Fajr Film Festival started on February the 6th. 33 movies will be competing in 3 different categories in this section.
The international section of the 42nd Fajr Film Festival includes 5 different categories, 2 of which were added this year, namely Belton Road, pertaining to the syndicate of the Shanghai Silk Road Association, which Iran has recently become a member, and Palestine, Soul and Breath, a special category added this year to the festival in condemnation of the ongoing Israeli genocide of Palestinians. The three other categories include the international competition dubbed Cinema Salvation, Eastern Vista for movies from Asian Islamic countries, and the Festival of Festivals. The international section aims to identify quality international and national films and to strengthen and encourage production of works aligned with Iranian cinema. In this section, priority is given to films dealing with topics seeking justice against oppression, global terrorism, violence and extremism, and on the other hand, encouraging moral, spiritual, and religious teachings through artistic expression. This year, the festival has received 621 submissions from 87 countries from across the world, 33 of which have made it to the competition. Winners of the various categories of the international section will be announced on the last day of the festival on February 11th, along with the winners of the national competition. And the 25th edition of the International Film Market, one of the main sideline events of FIF, with plenty of opportunities for movie producers and distributors, also opened on the same day.
This edition has 25 countries. We do have 7 pavilions from Russia, China, Malaysia, and Tajikistan, Arab countries, Uzbekistan, and China. These are our special guests with pavilions, and we do have 35 other companies on the world. And also beside them, the Iranian companies who get the opportunity to be present at the film market and also get connected with the film industry. And this is the most important thing, that they can provide their films and even find new connections for distributing their productions worldwide.
On February the 7th, the much-anticipated International Film Market opened on the sidelines of the festival. Iran's Minister of Culture and Islamic Guidance opened the 25th edition of the film market, which is one of the main events on the sidelines of the Fajr Film Festival. This year, representatives from 25 countries are participating. In this edition of the International Film Market, both feature-length movies and television series are available. The film market has always been a platform for promoting and distributing movies, particularly those recounting touching humane stories that create moments of understanding and displaying actions of kindness that are a source of hope and awareness. Movies that move us to the core and allow us to understand each other better. Also, movies that are great because of the critical approach they take towards humanity, displaying its darkest and cruelest side. All in all, the International Film Market provides the opportunity for distributors to hold exclusive meetings and exchange views with potential buyers and movie producers. So this is the part where there's going to be a lot of hustle and bustle over the next couple of days.
Mr. Khazai, thank you for the interview. First of all, I want to say a few days have been passed since the beginning of the Fajr Film Festival, and I'd like to know your perspective regarding
this year's festival and comparing it to the previous years?
Our aim is to boost cooperation with our neighboring countries in the field of movie production. In my opinion, the only thing that can improve international relations is cinema. Cinema is a common language that allows us to communicate effectively because we all have the same understanding of it. Obviously, when people from different parts of the world watch movies from other countries, they feel closer to them. Cinema provides a means to get to know them. And if we learn how to use the language of pictures and communicate through pictures, we might be able to prevent many unfortunate miscommunications, even prevent wars. And if we want to introduce our country, Iran, to the world, and if we want to create a new image of who we are, we have to be able to depict our country and our culture properly. Our movies should create a platform to boost our relations with our neighbors. That is why we have specific plans for joint film projects on the agenda. A number of movie scripts have been approved by the Iranian Organization of Cinema and Audiovisual Affairs. And I firmly believe that if we are to gain a foothold in the international film industry, we have to cooperate with other countries in joint movie productions.
Mr. Khazai, I know that you were the producer of the movie The Last Supper in the previous years, and this year in the 42nd Fajr Film Festival, the movie In the Heart of Raqqa was screened. Please explain about the connection or the potential relationship between these two movies. And also, we know that both movies are about the fight with Daesh and these... and also the developments, as I said in the previous question, in the region with Palestine and the Israeli regime.
We definitely consider regional countries an important part of our equations when it comes to collaboration. We have always tried to tell the untold stories of the oppressed, be it in regional countries and the axis of resistance or other parts of the world in Africa or Latin America. We focus on the stories of abuse and tyranny against people that have no means to defend themselves. Issues that concern public opinion, such as the ongoing genocide in Gaza, developments in Iraq and Syria. These are the topics that we focus on, and I have to add that we have produced many movies in line with this policy in many different genres, feature-length, short films, animations. The movie The Heart of Raqqa in this year's festival is about Syria, and we will have more movies next year. And we have already approved 6 movie scripts about Gaza. What I'm trying to say is that Iran is not indifferent, and we will be making movies to recount the stories of the oppressed people of Gaza.
Competing in the Fajr International Film Festival are usually inspired by the ongoing events and developments, and this year is no exception. Hello, Mr. Parvini. Thank you for the interview. The film The Heart of Raqqa was screened today in the 42nd Fajr Film Festival, and you were the producer of the movie, actually. So I understand that the movie was filmed both in Iran and Syria with Iranian and Syrian actors and actresses. Could you please tell me your idea behind this and why, what inspired you to do this?
When you want to make a movie, the first thing you have to do is to decide where you are going to film it. So, when I had this script with the story happening in Raqqa, during the time it was occupied by Daesh in 2016, I obviously had to do the filming there.
Also, please tell me, based on the recent developments in the region and what the Israeli regime is doing in Palestine,
killing our Muslim brothers and sisters and their innocent children, did you feel the responsibility to show these crimes to the people? And what was your assessment or evaluation of the whole process when you were producing the movie?
Obviously, in every movie project, the producer and the director, and even the writer sometimes, are preoccupied with producing it the best way possible. This is mainly because they all feel a connection to their story and they want to communicate their concerns with their audience. The movie will not be a good one if this connection does not exist. And the Zionist regime that you just mentioned is also important because in our movie, also you can see the influence of the Zionist regime.
Based on what features and elements did you decide to choose the actors and actresses?
Choosing the cast in all movie projects is an important and difficult task because the actors have to be able to play their part well in order for the audience to believe their story. So, we brought in two Syrian actors. One of them is a superstar called Omer Ali, a very popular actor in Syria. Of course, you know that Syria's cinema industry is not very active and actors are mainly involved in TV series. The other actor, Mehdi Sheikh Isa, is also from Syria. Only Mr. Haqiqat Dost and Ms. Mokhtari were Iranian actors. And I have to say that they did a very good job playing their roles. Their accents and everything was perfect. That is why the movie turned out to be so good.
Hello, Mr. Taghianipour. Thank you for the interview. It's an honor to have you here. I'd like to ask you about the movie. Well, you directed the movie, The Heart of Raqqa. I watched the movie, actually, and I understand that the movie was about a romantic idea in the heart of a war zone. What was the idea behind this? I mean, how did you come up with that idea?
Well, in all of my works, be it telefilms, plays or television series, I've always incorporated a love story. My love stories happen in different contexts. So for me, the violence that emerged in our region over the past couple of years also could serve as a context for a love story. So I did some research and eventually came up with the story of this movie. Well, all the things that happened and the tragic events that we have witnessed is part of the story of our region. This is our contemporary history. It cannot be overlooked. So movies depicting social issues in our region are all affected by these events. I was personally concerned and followed the news and developments every day, and I wanted to create a movie that would tell the story of the situation we had to endure. I felt compelled to document our experiences for future generations. So I based my plot in the events that happened from 2001 to 2019.
Well, movies and the media are very important tools for the soft war that is going on in the world, actually. How do you think movies can influence on how people think, how a nation can react to specific, in specific situations? What do you think about that?
Just as you mentioned yourself, in this media war, if we miss the opportunity to tell the world what's been really happening and to let the world know the truth, it will be distorted by others. We can even see this happening now. So if we don't document our history, future generations may be deceived, and that may lead them to wrong conclusions.
Hello and welcome, Mr. Bukhove. I'd like to ask you about the movie The Heart of Raqqa, which was screened in the festival this year. Could you please explain about the mood of the whole movie and also tell me, what do you think were the sources of inspiration to write the movie or to produce the movie?
The movie The Heart of Raqqa by Mr. Taghiani Pour puts the spotlight on a very important issue, which I personally believe is one of the most important challenges of our century. One that has also been reflected in movies, Daesh and the atrocities of the terrorist group, particularly the crimes they committed in Muslim countries. Many movies in different genres have told stories about this terrorist group. We have so far seen a number of action movies, spy movies, melodramas. One of the best movies about this subject is the one made by well-known director Ebrahim Hatemikia called Damascus Time. The movie focuses on terrorist group and actually does a great job in creating a clear image of Daesh terrorists. I personally believe that Iranian cinema is a pioneer in this regard. And maybe that is because our armed forces were in the front line fighting against them, so we actually have a first-hand account of who they really are.
Women have always played an important role in Iranian cinema. This year, one of the promising movies is made by Ensia Shahhoseini, an Iranian director with an impressive resume. Hello, Mrs. Shahhoseini. Thank you for the interview. It was an honor to have you on our show. Please tell me about your movie. What inspired you to make this movie, and what is the movie about?
Considering the situation after the Islamic Revolution, there were no female soldiers undertaking combat roles and fighting on the front lines. However, they served in non-combat roles as nurses and doctors, but in border cities only, meaning that they couldn't even leave, for example, the southern city of Ahvaz. Back then, I was trying to find a way, you know, an excuse to be there on the front line. When I went there eventually, I had the opportunity to experience it firsthand. I was able to see for myself all of those things that I had read about wars in the books, all the pictures I had seen, how the people interacted. It was an entirely different world. So many things happened to me during the war, and basically, my personality was formed. I became who I am today, and in this movie, I am telling my story. This movie depicts the life of a female reporter on the front lines that has no clue about what's happening. She's just trying to get to the front line to take some pictures. Her main goal is to hopefully take impactful pictures of the war, enter a photography competition, win the prize, and make a living. That's all. This is what she has in mind. But when she goes there and has an up-close look at the situation, situation, and when she meets the women working behind the front lines making sacrifices every day, in the scorching heat of the summer or on freezing cold winter days, despite all the hardships, doing what they're doing to help the soldiers, preparing meals, washing their clothes, all of this has a strong impact on this woman, and she becomes one of them.
Please talk about the role of Iranian women in the movie industry.
The truth is, the 1979 Islamic Revolution allowed women to play a more important role in Iranian cinema. Even in the early years of the Islamic Republic and after the revolution, we had female scriptwriters, and all in all, more women started taking on executive roles, filling positions such as script supervisors and other positions that require technical skills. We even witnessed a new generation of female directors emerging who, by the way, happened to do a great job and make an impact with their movies. Female directors who were able to gain recognition and receive positive reviews from movie critics. Their movies were not just great works in terms of storytelling, but also from technical point of view. They were among the best movies of their time. Now, in the 42nd edition of the Fash Film Festival, we have Ensia Shaws in his movie. Well, you know that she's a veteran movie director who stands out this year. First of all, because she is the only female director taking part, and that is enough to have all eyes on her. She is also the first female director who has actually taken part in combat operations. You know that she's actively participated in military operations during the 8-year Iran-Iraq war. So all those memories and first-hand experiences are reflected in her cinematic works. And that is why all eyes are on her this year.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until next time, goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment. Allah, Allah,
Allah, Allah. این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah, subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah, walhamdulillah.
May 28th, 1983.
Subjects on divine issues and mythical issues are easy, and each person thinks he has understood them, and the subjects of logical reasoning at the same time that they are exact are easy to understand. After the rise of logical reasoning and following it, reaching the inferences of these subjects and the results of the logical reasoning to the heart, which is called faith, is more difficult. Often the experts on logical reasoning do not reach to this degree of faith.
We seek refuge from Satan the cursed in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. In this program, what we do is to listen to certain speeches and viewpoints of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, who was the great founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and talk about these lessons and moral themes that we can take from these speeches in order for us to make use of them in our daily lives. Well, on the subject of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "Know that a revolution as good as the revolution of Iran has not taken place before." This statement of Imam rahmatullah alayhi is about the unique features of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. The Iranian nation pursued numerous objectives in their uprising against the despotic Pahlavi regime, which were summarized in three demands, namely independence, freedom, and Islamic government. The Islamic Republic is no doubt the greatest achievement of the Islamic Revolution. This popular system of government has by far exceeded the criteria of the Western democracy and has in fact marginalized it, as it is popular and democratic in the real sense of the word. The Islamic Revolution granted the Iranian nation freedom in different fields. The Iranian nation had been suppressed for centuries, especially during the Pahlavi regime. Any dissent would be quenched and opponents would be jailed, tortured, and murdered. In the Islamic Republic of Iran, however, people are free to hold legal gatherings and meetings and express their opinion in various matters. They elect the officials of the country, including the president, members of the parliament, and city councils. They also elect the members of the assembly of experts, who appoint the leader. The massive turnout of the people at ballot boxes indicates that they use the best opportunity that the Islamic Republic has granted them to determine their fate. Moreover, religious minorities as part of the Iranian nation enjoy freedom and have representatives in the parliament. Okay, dear listeners, it seems that our time for this episode has come to its end. And for ending, let's just recite the sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi about the Islamic Revolution. He said, "Know that a revolution as good as the revolution of Iran had not taken place before." Thank you very much. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified. We're the only weekly show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In this week's show, we'll be focusing on the West's newfound commitment to the so-called two-state solution in response to the genocide being perpetrated by Israel in Gaza. But why don't they propose a democratic solution rather than a top-down imposition? After all, they're forever proclaiming their commitment to democracy. And enabling the entire adult population to vote on their future would be a genuine exercise in self-determination.